The big advantage to listening to pre-market prep is you find out what's really going on in the markets. Wicked rotation yesterday. Buying the small caps, interest rate sensitive stocks. We'll cover that today. Waller interrupts the rally, talking hawkish. He must also listen to pre-market prep. Not much on the earnings front. Mark Chaykin, 8:15. GDP, 8:30. Hey, folks, it's the end of the week. Pre-market prep starts right now.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
Okay, good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this edition, pre-market prep. We're flat. We're down 50 cents, 53.07 and a quarter. Got hit. Nice rally yesterday. We will talk about that in just a few minutes. The old 315 ramp. Buck back over 104. The futures up 21 cents at 104.28. Bonds down a quarter point, man. They like doing that. 7:30 seconds at just under 120. Crude back up. Buck 12, 82.47. Gold moving in on that high from last week. Up 21.40 at 22.34. Is there a catch-up trade in silver? I don't know. That's down just 4 cents at 24.71. Another good day for Bitcoin, up 22.90, 71,600. Let's bring on Triple D here. Triple D, if you sat out the whole day yesterday and then you came back at 3:15, that rally, what a wicked, wicked rally in the small caps.
Yep.
Interest rates, right?
Yeah. Wicked. Right. Well, the end of the day, the 3 o'clock, I don't know what that was all about. That just went crazy there. But, we were down most of the day. But what was really moving yesterday was everything that had lagged. It was the laggard trade. They were selling NVIDIA. They were selling Bitcoin. I even lightened up a little bit of Bitcoin. They were selling everything and that had been working really well. And they were moving into everything that hasn't run yet. So they were moving in all the laggards, IWM leading the charge, stocks. Bring on AB here because he has commentary here too. He was talking, ENPH, the huge move there. So solar was hot. All the stuff that had lagged is what they were buying. We are still, folks, in rotation station. This market, if it's selling tech, it's buying something else. It's just one stock versus IWM versus the growth names. That's what was happening yesterday.
AB, there you are, buddy. What are you looking at this morning?
Well, it seems like it's kind of a slower news day, Joel, but we did have an acquisition from Home Depot. Home Depot announced it is buying a specialty distributor. This was a company that was private, not on the public markets, SRS, for $18.25 billion. And essentially what Home Depot is trying to do with this acquisition is it's making a move to get more customers on the professional side. So about half of Home Depot's customers are guys like, us that might go to Home Depot to buy some stuff for a do-it-yourself project. The other half are professional roofers, people that are doing construction and all this stuff. And so they're hoping to basically get more project deals through this distributor, $18.25 billion. I mean, Home Depot is about a $400 billion company. So it's not a huge acquisition for the company. But obviously, Home Depot thinks this could help it grow in the long term, which I like the move. Again, SRS is a distributor company. And one of the biggest problems on construction sites is when the workers run out of something and they got to go to Home Depot or something to pick it up, that cuts out like 3 hours of their day, right? Like they were in a groove working and now you got to go pick up more materials. So SRS, Home Depot's hoping it can help, ship more materials on their own and get some more business.
A couple thoughts. One, when you have these private deals, it's very hard for the Arabs to figure out what to do with it. So they're not even touching it. So you're not going to see a lot of arbitrage coming in here and saying, well, they're paying $20 billion, they've overpaid. When they're buying a private company, we don't really know what that valuation was. When you buy a public company, you can say, oh, it was trading for 10, they just paid 20, they paid a $10 billion premium. We don't know what that premium is because private companies aren't valued like they are in the public market. So I think it's kind of a nothing burger. So far, so good, though. I mean, they're buying it up, so they're probably seeing, you know, the points that you're making, AB, that this probably helps business to a certain extent. They're obviously, you know, coming here, buying suppliers. I mean, it sounds on the surface pretty good. I just don't know if $20 billion is an overpay or an underpay. I don't know because I can't value that company. So difficult for a trader to come in and say, this was a great deal or this was, you know, they paid too much. Difficult to do.
Well, you can look at the stock reaction, and if the, you know, overall market investors were super worried that they overpaid by a bunch, the stock would probably be getting hit a little bit harder this morning. The CEO, Ted Decker of Home Depot, said that it could increase Home Depot's total addressable market by $50 billion. I mean, it's not surprising to hear him be bullish on this deal right after they did it. But I mean, if that ends up being even half true to $25 billion, then they already got their money back. So, you know, again, not a huge deal or not a huge acquisition for Home Depot. Obviously, the stock's not moving too much on it, but it could be, you know, something to watch if it does end up, if Home Depot is able to get more business from the professional side. Again, makes up about half of its business right now.
So
if you want to be a negative Nelly on it, they're looking for growth. Maybe they see the individual consumer slowing down, so they're going for growth. And I'll just, Dennis, give you a final comment on this, but I would just look for your three-day high. I mean, that's all I can give you, 389.86. If you're looking to lighten up, that was right in the area of a previous day's low. But, man, I wonder what those workers are doing. If it takes 3 hours to go to Home Depot, I wonder if they're stopping stopping and getting a Wendy's or something. But
oh, there's the coffees and they find ways.
Well, I only know that because I have one of my buddies' dad who's like in the construction. He's a general contractor, had a startup, like an app that was basically a Uber delivery, but for that, so that if your workers needed more concrete, they didn't have to go to the store. They could just hit the app and they would get it delivered so they could keep working while they were waiting on it. I don't know whatever's happened with that app. If it ends up going public or something, we'll bring them on and talk about it.
I just want to make a general comment here, just pointing out something that you said as well, you know, that maybe, you know, people kind of like this deal because it's trading up. It's possible. One thing you're missing is that institutional traders are not at their desk yet. So when you have a news event overnight, 99% of the time it's algorithmic driven, meaning the algos are always awake. So they're coming in and they're hitting. They're doing things. You can value, if this was a public deal, the algos would be all over it because they can value it. The algos are out here. The algos are like, we don't know what to do with this. We're not trading it. And the institutional money managers aren't at the desk yet. So I would say this still just isn't even in. It's still in price discovery here. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get a significant move off of this either direction. I'm not going to try to pick the direction here yet because it's up, but you know, it's up a buck. You know, it's up a $1.21, but straight 8,900 shares. Let's wait, you know, until we get to like 10 o'clock and we start getting institutional money managers and see where they vote with the big dollars, because the algos are just out on this.
Got it. Yeah.
Dennis, do you think that the algos are adjusting to daylight savings?
I don't know if they have. You know, I have not. So maybe I should just go back to being full algorithmic trader, and then I wouldn't have to worry about these adjustments here. But and, I like point-click stuff.
I did work construction. I worked construction one summer in back in Monroe, Michigan. I helped put in a sewer line. And
ooh,
man,
dirty construction.
I know, man. They worked my butt off on that. I mean, I finished that project. My dad's like, "Oh, you want another project?" I'm like, "No, I'll go back to being a lifeguard."
Not fun. Okay.
Yeah, and Joel, that's Dennis. Sorry, that's a good point. I think I wasn't saying that the market loves this deal because obviously the stock's not trading up that much. I think it's more if it was such an overpay. My point was, I think you'd be seeing it trade lower, which, to your point, we could still see that after the market opens.
I'm kind of with you. I think that the market's going to have trouble even discovering if it was an overpay or not, right? Because it's a private company and they're going to like the idea of them, you know, getting a supplier. You know, on the surface, you know, if you're going to say overpay, underpay, it just seems like a good deal all around. And if we can't, you know, figure out if it's an overpay or an underpay, if the market can't figure it out, it could rally on it. So it's not surprising it's up. I'm kind of with you.
All right, let's move to RH, formerly known as Restoration Hardware, which First of all, this is what I don't get, this rebrand, because I went from Restoration Hardware to RH. What does RH stand for? Restoration Hardware. The company reported earnings after the close yesterday, missed on EPS, missed on sales, and the stock is trading up about 10%. So right after the numbers came in, the stock got hit, and then the CEO on the call gave some kind of bullish guidance based on demand, so that improved results may be coming but are likely priced in. Said that demand is expected to remain high through 2024 and 2025. So again, this is your like luxury furniture and home store. I mean, part of it is like, okay, if interest rates do slow down the economy, you'd expect companies like this to maybe, we've talked about the big ticket items. And Restoration Hardware, RH, sells couches for like $15,000. That's a big ticket item.
I would never buy anything in an RH. It's so expensive. Joel and I have had this conversation on this show for a decade on this stock, and we don't get, you know, why it just goes up and up and up and up, and obviously maybe not as of late, but for years.
Subscriptions. They have a subscription model.
Is that what it is? But I go into that store, and there's nothing. Like, like when my wife walks in that store, I just, you know, oh my gosh, please don't like anything in here, because it is so expensive. Everything is so expensive in there. But I mean, I guess, you know, when you're selling a couch, AB, for 15 grand, the markup on that's probably $10,000. They make a lot of money. They sell one of those couches. Sell one couch a day and you make a lot of money.
Yeah, I think the flip side to the, you know, when you see the big ticket items slowing down, you know, interest rates, I mean, I'm sure some people were borrowing money to buy some of this stuff, but I mean, you also have a much wealthier customer base, to where if there is some sort of an economic slowdown, they can probably still afford this stuff. You know, if you're shopping at Restoration Hardware, you know, I mean, like, interest rates probably aren't going to hurt you too much. So again, Restoration Hardware trading up this morning, 9.61%, closed higher around 4% yesterday. So big move in RH over the last 2 days.
And the move on the earnings itself was just wicked too. So this stock initially traded on the earnings miss, because it missed. Initially traded down almost 30 points. Like, you'll see that little candle, like you can't even really see it there, Joel, because it was on the initial candle. But that line there doesn't show red.
It's there it is. I was looking for
it. Oh yeah, it's there. It traded down like 270 bucks. And I got caught on this because I smacked William Sonoma on it, thinking, you know, William Sonoma's going to go down with it, which, you know, probably would have. But the thing, you know, reversed so quickly in my face that I'm like, oh my gosh, now my William Sonoma is no good. So when you do that, you should hedge yourself and actually buy some of the RH, which I did not. You know, I just see the earnings miss and I'm like, oh, it could go lower. And then boom, for whatever reason, you know, a minute later, they just started buying the hell out of it. And we can say maybe it was something they said on the conference call, but I didn't know the conference was 1 minute after, you know, the earnings. I don't think it was. So whipsaw trading action in this puppy, down 30, then now going up 30. Crazy moves.
You just broke one of the rules that you yell at me about, because William Sonoma's already reported.
Yeah, but it's going to go down something. I hit it flat. Okay. No, it's true, Joel, and it's a great point. Okay. William Sonoma move will be muted, because it's already reported, but it doesn't mean it doesn't have any move at all. It means it does move like one third of it and move like one eighth of it. So it's just a more muted response. But if you see RH down 30 and it's going to be down 30, William Sonoma is going to go down. Okay. But that wasn't the case, because it went down 30 and then it's immediately back up. And then I'm scrambling, and somehow I actually got covered and didn't really lose much. But, you know, now William Sonoma has actually bet up a couple of bucks here because of RH.
I'm
lucky to get covered. But again, you know, it's not going to have a huge move here because it already reported. So that's a good point, too.
One technical comment here. That spike, I can't really give you support in this thing with up 28 bucks. Pre-market high, 329 even. And you have a little bit of confluence here, because I thought I saw a high. Yes, I did. I thought I saw one at 27.50. But no, I didn't. Keep an eye. You want to follow through on this one. Got to get through that pre-market high at 329. Minor resistance right now for RH.
All right. Well, it is 8:16 a.m. We got our man Mark Chaykin hanging out backstage. Let's go ahead and bring Mark on. See which stocks he's been watching, what picks he's got for us today.
Mark Chaykin, Chaykin Analytics, joins our show every other Thursday to give us fundamental and technical outlooks on the market. Mark, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Joel. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good here. Well, where do you want to start here? Let's just go broad market, and then Triple D usually takes over with you. So
how about if we start with RH Corp? Because I was listening. I actually watched that conference call last night and came in this morning with the notion of buying puts, scaling into April puts with the April 5th expiration. That was the most rambling. That was an hour and 40-minute conference call.
Oh,
that
God.
Guy was on Painful speed. He was on speed. And there's nothing in that conference call that would make you want to buy the stock.
Wow.
Honest to God, the numbers are bad. This is like levitation or short covering, but there is, and you know, it's a thin stock. I really would like to buy some puts, but you know that these things can last a day or two. So the strength like this. So I'm going to scale into some puts with an April 5th expiration.
You had some analysts coming in and raising price targets this morning. JP Morgan maintain overweight, raises price target 345. What are these analysts missing, Mark?
It's not there in the conference call, and it wasn't there in the numbers. So I think enough said. This is, you know, this guy has a vision for another Ralph Lauren. Basically, he wants to be that's the reason for RH Corp.
So I take you don't own
RH,
it.
RL, you know, just trying to piggyback on brand awareness.
I take it you don't own any of the furniture, couches or anything then?
No, I tried to buy one during COVID and they were on back order. You couldn't get them.
Back order and too expensive. Everything is so much money there. The person who can afford to shop there is Mark Chaykin.
There's a company called Our House, which is actually a really well-run company, family-owned. Yeah. And that's where I got my couch. But
that's funny. I've actually got our couches over 10 years ago from Our House as well. It was really good.
They do a real
10
real
years,
job.
And they're 10 years. They're now just moved to my basement, but they've been fabulous couches. Like after 10 years, they're still great. Our House is good stuff.
And one other allusion, then we'll get back to Joel's question. You were talking about the Home Depot acquisition of SRS. I think TopBuild, BLD, is a great stock in the sort of professional, selling to professional space. The rationale that Home Depot gave was they want to be more into professionals. So if you see some sort of pullback in TopBuild, they got, you know, serious earnings, a growing business, and, you know, mid-cap stock, which is the sweet spot I want to be in going forward. Getting back to Joel's point, but TopBuild had a great earnings report. Obviously, you want to see a pullback, but that's another name in a similar space that I really like.
It's actually Power traded down just slightly, probably on this deal. So good call there, Mark, on BLD. So let's move away from the RH. Let's move into, I've got to get your comments on NVIDIA because we haven't had you on the show for a couple of weeks here. And obviously, NVIDIA has been running. Pulls back the last couple of days. I did lighten up. I'm still in a pretty hefty position in NVIDIA, you know, relative to my portfolio. What are your thoughts here? I mean, are we stalling out here? Or is this just another pullback to buy NVIDIA?
Well, it's another pullback where we'll see new highs. I'm not buying it up here. We've been in the stock for a long, long, long time. But
you're still in too?
My wife, Sandy, is, yeah.
Your wife, Sandy, is, yeah.
Yeah, she's in it at much lower prices. But again, peeling off as you go up, you've got to peel off stocks like this. Otherwise, you get caught up in some sort of avalanche at some point, and then you don't know what to do. But it's the new chip that they announced subsequent to my last visit to the show is just amazing. You know, anywhere between 5 and 30x terms of speed with less power consumption. They're where you have to be. The one I'm a little bit cautious about is AMD. AMD to me was always been sort of a me too, more commodity oriented play. And the power gauge is still bullish, but I think this is the one where you have to be leery. And I would sell AMD on strength, not short it, but take profits on strength, because it just feels like this stock is playing catch up all the time, and AMD and NVIDIA is just so far out in front.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, we've talked about valuation here, and its valuation being higher than that of NVIDIA's, and obviously still being the number two player there. I own both. I've sold over half my AMD, though. It's been a really good run, too. Reason, too, like, sometimes when these things, like, and they've been really good trades, and like you said, when they're just running, sometimes you just got to lighten up. I mean, a lot of times what, you know, everybody does, you know, sometimes right is, you know, if it's good companies and reasonable valuations, you don't look and you just hold forever. But, you know, sometimes these, you know, moves that we have in 2-3 months, I mean, when stocks are doubling in a 2-3 month period, usually there's some type of check back. Nothing goes straight up.
We're not in usual times. We haven't had a pullback below the 21-day average in the market since November. This is highly unusual, but also very bullish for the next foreseeable future through the end of the year. So, Joel, let's get back to the market.
Just real quick, one of our listeners was asking if you see any head and shoulder patterns in any of these, and I'm looking. I mean,
I see AMD forming one.
Is it the AMD that they were looking at? I mean, we're not.
I see it. Like, you know, they're talking the 180 resistance, then the breakout, and the obviously 220. Going up to 220, and then the key reversal day, and we never touched back that. Now we're consolidating and forming the right shoulder at 180, and that would be a bearish technical pattern. Yeah. So there is a valid point there from a technical perspective. I can see what they're talking about.
Yeah,
and then when Mark starts to get nervous, I start to get nervous too, because Mark's been in this business a long time. He makes some fabulous calls.
Very kind. Let's talk about the market.
Okay.
We've had so many momentum signals, not just price momentum, but breadth momentum, percentage of stocks above their 50-day average in the S&P 1500, went above 90 in December, January. What does it mean? It means that we're going to be strong into year end and beyond. And the sweet spot when you have this broadening out, which you saw yesterday, you saw the equal weighted S&P was up 1.6%. which reflected the fact that a lot of these defensive stocks started to move, utilities, staples, and pharma. And you want to, I think, start looking at quality mid-cap companies, because they tend to outperform when everything is got a tailwind. And that's where we are right now. I do think, you know, we just before April earnings season, we may see the market peak, but anybody who's tried to call a short-term top here has been on the wrong side of the market. But I do think if we spike up to, say, 5,400 by April 8th, let's say, we could be in for a little bit of a pullback. But every pullback, in my view, is a buying opportunity.
Mark, yesterday the Dow had its best day of the year, closing up more than 1.2%. And the IWM also had a great day, closing up 2%. I feel like that's kind of rare to see small caps and the Dow be the two, you know, best performing indices on the day. What do you make of that? Is that rare to see?
It is. I think it's the fact that tech is sort of lagging, and you've got a broadening out, and that broadening out can happen in the small cap space, or it can happen in the blue chip space, or, as was the case, the other 493 stocks in the S&P 500.
Yeah. I mean, do you expect the Dow, to continue? I mean, the Dow's been, performing really well the past week or so. Do you expect strength to continue there?
I you have to look at the individual components. The Dow is never very much on my mind. Not to be.
It's only 30 companies. I mean, right? It's.
Yeah, I mean, it's a.
Somebody told me it got to 40,000. I didn't even know that. Like, that's how much I look at the Dow. I didn't even know it was at 40,000.
I know.
Somebody called me and like, wow, Dow 40,000. I was like, that's news to me, because I never look at the Dow. It's not on any screen. The only way I would see it is if I looked up at CNBC or something.
I hear you. You know, and you've got some big names in there, like Microsoft. Boeing and Microsoft and Johnson & Johnson. So when pharma goes up and energy's up, the Dow will probably outperform.
Another thing I wanted to ask about, Mark, and we've talked to you about some cybersecurity plays the past month or so. Recent story with United Health, United Healthcare got a big cyber attack, had to pay more than $3 billion. I mean, do stories like this help propel the cybersecurity names, Fortinet, et cetera, when you see a big company like United, UNH getting hit with a big cyber attack, they have to pay more than $3 billion. That's got to make some other companies say, hey, we might want to beef up our cybersecurity, because if we pay, X company $1 million a year, that's going to be better than paying $3 billion down the road if we get hacked.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a wake-up call for the cyber stocks. It's not quite that easy, though. You've got to test anybody's software within your system, and it's a tailwind for sure. By the way, they only paid $22 million in Bitcoin, not in the billions.
Oh, I got a headline that said United Health Group has paid more than $3 billion to providers following cyber
attack. Providers.
Well,
yeah.
Providers are the doctors, guys. Yeah. The doctors weren't getting paid until this week.
Oh, okay. Right? So that's after. So they had to slow down all their payments.
Yep.
Okay.
They didn't slow it down. It just cut off like a noose, and the doctors were squawking.
Mark, we got to let you go here in 1 second. I just want to know when the CEO on speed during the conference call has been added to the chicken money flow.
Since ChatGPT enables me to factor that in.
Okay. All right, Mark.
By the way, one stock I do like before we go is C Limited. It's a name I've never talked about before.
Oh, SE, yeah.
SE, they had a great earnings report. Yeah. I love the mix of e-commerce, the financial products, e-financial products, and gaming. I think this is a really solid company with a lot of turnaround potential as Asia, and particularly the South China area, comes out of a recession. So I think this is a really solid stock, and I like it down here at 53.
We'll keep an eye on it. Mark Chaik at Chaik Analytics joining us here at 8:30 a.m. Mark, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Dennis, go wide.
I know.
Okay.
Dear Mark, thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. GDP coming up. Not one of our bigger moving numbers here. We'll go to the S&P.
Could move, though, because, we're speculating, getting ahead of the numbers tomorrow, which are coming out on a day that obviously, which is ridiculous, but a day that they're not going to be, nobody able to trade on them.
Okay. Haven't spent much time above unchanged here. That was our old-time closing high yesterday at 08.25. Had some fluff after hours with the pre-market high or after hours high, 1375. If you want to sell the old-time high, get your order out there at 2275. Coming on the downside here, kind of light on the downside. Pre-market low, 01, have nothing for you there. We'll see if they hit this, or it's a nothing muffin. Jobless claims, Q4, final GDP. Let's go to Aaron.
All right, still waiting on these numbers to come in. Okay, GDP came in at 3.4% versus 3.2% estimated, so slightly hot there by 0.2%. U.S. initial jobless claims came in at 210,000 versus 212,000 estimate, so a little light there. Continuing jobless claims came in at, 1.8 million versus 1.7 million. Basically unchanged from month over month. Core PCE prices came in at 2% versus 2.1% estimate. So slightly light on the core PCE prices. That's got to be good news. I mean, it's not a huge, not super cool, but it's at least not hot. I mean, I'll take that any day of the week. So are we getting looks like we got a pop and then coming back down a little bit.
Did the core PCE, did they change their mind on that?
I don't know. I was so confused looking at this last night, Joel, because we talked about it. We were like, no way they're reporting all this PCE data and stuff tomorrow when they're closed. But from what I could see last night, they reported core PCE today, but then the rest of the numbers tomorrow, again, on the day the market's closed. I don't really understand it. I mean, you guys have been doing this longer than I am.
No, I don't know.
I'm not an economist, though, too, and I don't ever see them report. All the years I've been trading, I haven't seen major numbers getting dropped on a holiday.
Yeah.
That's what I find very, very weird. But
yeah.
So then Powell's probably speaking today, then, at 11:30, if all things are equal.
Well, I don't think so.
No, I think he's still scheduled. I don't know. I mean, we'll...
I don't know. Whatever.
We're all messed up on the scheduling here.
Go out to
anyways,
lunch.
Jobless claims, GDP. We're up slightly on this. Nothing. Definitely not nothing. Negative news, but not a big move here either. I mean, we're talking about a 2-point S&P move. So it's kind of been crickets.
Yeah, so I guess, go ahead, Joel.
I'm just saying that's a good number to me. I don't think we need to, like, do 9 interest rates cuts this year, but whatever.
Yeah, Powell is speaking tomorrow. So I guess while we're talking about the economy and economic numbers, we should talk about the Fed Governor Waller's comments last night, basically saying came in, on the hawkish side after pumping Powell came out last week and was, pumping the market. Was that 2 weeks ago now? I can't keep track of time. But either way, Powell came out after the,
Wednesday, believe
last
me.
Last Wednesday when the market, market hit all time highs while Powell was speaking, people, were basically saying he sounded pretty dovish. And then you got the Fed governor coming in sounding hawkish. You got the chairman on one end sounding a little dovish. The governor on the other end sounded a little hawkish. Waller basically said, I don't know why we need to cut 3 times. One could be enough. And so I think that spooked markets a little bit, but clearly not that much, because we were we were trading lower this morning on the futures, but not by that much. So I wonder, is the market really relying on these 3 cuts right now, or could the market still stay afloat if we get 1 or 2? Is getting less than 3 going to really bring us that much further down? I mean, I don't know.
I think it's just market rallying on hope here too. Like, so you get, yesterday we get popping up, and now you got Waller comments that brought us down a little bit yesterday, but you got Pump and Powell coming and speaking tomorrow. I mean, we're getting conflicting viewpoints here. Powell was very, very clear. He said the Fed is looking at 3 cuts. So this Waller news, and Waller does not have as much weight as Powell. Waller's, always a little bit hawkish. He's like, I don't have reason for 3. So he's just disagreeing publicly. But does his opinion have as much weight as Powell? Hell no. So Powell clearly, and when he spoke, when was it? A week ago? When did he speak?
It was a week ago Wednesday. Yeah, it was a week ago yesterday.
So
I know
3.
For sure.
A week ago yesterday, he clearly said 3. I'm going to go with the Fed chair over, the Waller. 100 out of 100 times. So I think they are still thinking about 3. It's still kind of green light go here for stocks. IWM looks like, to Mark's point too, he just said, we kind of look like we're gearing up to break out on the IWM. We had a pretty good day yesterday. They're buying pullbacks on stocks. I'm trying to position myself. I bought a bank yesterday. I bought another commodity stock yesterday.
You got a whole
I'm
bank?
Some stuff.
What bank did you
Canadian,
buy?
Bank of Nova Scotia. I re-got
it. You bought the whole
yesterday.
Bank? Man, you are
the whole damn thing. I just bought. No, valuation still attractive. Just rebalancing. When I'm selling something, I lighten up a little bit of NVIDIA. I lighten up a little bit of my Bitcoin. I'm like, well, I don't want to be out of the market. So I put it right back to work. And I bought a little bit of Bank of Nova Scotia. And I bought a little bit of Alcoa. This was in the morning. Actually, both of those trades worked out well. I picked up Alcoa around 32, ended up a day at 33. So it was a pretty good move. Bank of Nova Scotia, I bought on the Canadian exchange, but it was down at the lowest of the day. So it popped up too. I mean, just rebalancing to a certain extent. My portfolio has moved so much from, to the growthy stuff, because I put that stuff in and then it just exploded in price. That, I'm just doing some rebalancing. It's natural. Like when you start looking, NVIDIA's 5%, my portfolio, I'm like, well, I don't want it up at 5. I had it at 3, bring it down a little bit because this is exploding. Like typically I come in, when I make a position in my portfolio, it's usually 2 or 3% of my portfolio. But then they double, they go to 5 or 6. You're like, well, you could just keep letting it go. And sometimes they can just take over. Bitcoin, same thing, brought in at 2, it's over 5. I'm like, okay, well, now it's time to just do a little bit of readjustment. Ideally, I always like 50 or 100 stocks in my long-term portfolio. I don't have that many right now.
Crazy.
But, it's just doing a little bit of rebalancing.
Going back to the, Carmen said that they're playing good cop, bad cop, talking about Powell and Waller here. It's kind of like, when you have one parent that's a lot more lenient than the other and you know which one you got, you ask one, oh, can I sleep over at Tommy's house? They say no, you go ask the other and they're like, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, Powell seems like the one I'd rather go ask for something right now. He seems a little bit more lenient. Let's see, where do we want to go?
That's not what you do, Aaron. You tell one that the other said yes.
Yeah, well, then Mom said okay.
Yes, and then you go to the other. Yeah, it's easy. Yeah, it's easy to play that. We're leaking here, Dennis. Watch out here. got the pop. I was hoping to see that high from yesterday at 13 and a quarter. We came just shy up at 1250. I think the battleground here is going to be that closing price, that all-time closing price here at 08 and a quarter in the S&P. Kind of thought we were going to, you know, zigzag all the way to, you know, the number tomorrow, but now there's no number tomorrow. So we'll see if we stay. We kind of exceeded the top of the trading range here for the week. So we'll see if we can stay in that upper quadrant.
Well, no, I think they're still part of the number tomorrow, like AB was saying. Like,
no, there's still numbers tomorrow.
From what resale, wholesale inventories?
No, they're still PCE. It was just
they gave this PCE core price index, you know. But the main number, I'm just trying to read it here too. I believe it's still tomorrow here.
Right. I think they just gave part of the PCE data today. That's why.
It's confusing here. Confusing. Like, we're getting the number. The PCE is coming in tomorrow.
And Powell is still scheduled to speak, from what I can see, at 11:30 a.m. tomorrow. Again, on a day the market's closed, so. I don't know. Maybe Bitcoin will be the way to play Powell's press conference tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
You're pumping Powell if he starts talking about, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If he reiterates the 3 rate cuts, you might see Bitcoin moving, and you could see extra volatility because people are trading that because the market's closed. Someone else in the chat pointed out that, you know, across the world, other markets are open. It's just a holiday here. But, I mean, again, this is U.S. economic data. It's rare to
see. Well, it's Good Friday, so Canadian markets are closed as well here. So North America, I don't know, maybe they don't celebrate Good Friday in other parts of the world. I don't know that, and not in other parts of the world, but Good Friday is a pretty major holiday.
Right.
I mean, if you're a Christian, it's pretty major.
So, which is a large portion of the world.
Billion people or more.
We did have some news on AMC come across my desk while we were talking to Mark Chaykin. AMC doing an offering, Class A common stock of up to 200.
How can they offer more stock? Is there any more stock out there to offer?
The stock.
Well, I mean.
This stock, this company, I mean, just robbing from, you know, like, shareholders on a continuous basis here. All the offerings, you know, the CEO selling all the stock back, you know, in the day when the stock was memeing or aping. I guess they call this one the ape. I feel, you know, bad for everybody. But again, we warned on this multiple times. The all-time high on AMC is $726. It's $3. It's 99.5% off all-time highs. They continue to do offerings. All that money they raised, you know, they just burned through all that or what? You just, like, all when it was memeing,
it all went,
you know,
to Adam going Aaron. Up
from 3.5 to 8 to 20 to 50 to 70. They were doing offerings up there, and Adam Aaron selling everything. They just burn all that cash. They got to do more offerings now, dilution more. This is a terrible story, folks. And Adam Aaron did not do any favors for anyone here. So I know you guys are all, apes are all behind Adam Aaron and saying, yeah, he's going to. But again, and they're going to hate me for this. But, I mean, he's the one who made all the money off of this selling up there.
And he also, I mean, outside of the stock, he got got like a salary of like $20 million.
Adam Aaron got rich off of all the.
He's given Aaron's a bad name. I denounce his you know, job so far.
Hank Aaron's, all the good Aaron Bree, all the good Aaron's.
Come on.
And now he's giving Aaron's a bad name.
Come on. I do. I will say, like, I saw a movie in the theater for the first time.
He's going to hate us for this, too, because he listens. He follows Benzinga. Remember, we had a negative article, and he was just trashing Benzinga, saying we were the worst media place ever. You know, just, you know, the apes were all mad at us, too, at Benzinga, because we said something negative about Adam Aaron. He's going to hate me for this now, too, because I've said negative about him before, too. But I just, like, come on. You know, like, who got rich off this? Let's call it. Let's just call it who it is. You know, all the apes, you know, got broke off of this. And who made the money? Adam Aaron.
Yeah, I hope he heard me say that he's giving Aaron.
How do you really feel, Dennis? I mean, really, like, don't hold yourself in. No, I mean,
if the apes are listening, it's the truth. The guy is super rich now because of the apes. And everybody else is sitting with a $3 stock that was $700.
To Abel's point in the chat, I think even the apes have turned on Aaron now. I mean, when you're losing money, right? Like, it's easy to start, you know, not liking someone that's making all the money. I was gonna say, I did see a movie in theaters for the first time since COVID a few months ago, and I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of nice. I forgot how, like, it's kind of fun to go to the movie theater. So I hope in the long run, like, still a dying business, dying industry. I hope if it's not AMC. I hope we still have movie theaters, you know, 20 years from now, just so you have that option. Maybe it doesn't look exactly how it looks now in terms of how many theaters they have. I mean, you drive by some of these and they've got like 16, 24 theaters, and on like a Tuesday, Wednesday night, how many people are really there watching movies? But again, I hope, you know, we still have that option in the future.
What movie did you see?
This was over the summer. This was back when Oppenheimer and Barbie came out, and I went and saw those.
Oh, there's a lot. Yeah. Okay. Dennis, just real quick. This is a total off tangent, but it's not a bad tangent. Okay. We're mentioning movies, and I wouldn't have thought of it unless you guys mentioned this. So I went up to Ann Arbor yesterday to take my nephews out. One of them had a birthday. And we're talking about all the classes. I was trying to see if the blow-off classes I took were still there. And Lisa mentioned a movie class. And they go, no. He goes, but there's an entire class on Star Wars at the University
that's
of Michigan.
That's awesome. I'd take that class.
I know. That's what I said. And she goes, I said, I bet you
I could teach that
own.
Class.
Before we move on
I
from
love
movies.
Star Wars. Everything's Star Wars. Star Wars rules.
Before we move on from movies, what is your guys' favorite stock market or financial movie?
Well, you know what? You probably got to go back to like Wall Street or something if you really want to go with the classics.
Martin
but then
Sheen,
I love Wolf of Wall Street too. It was a fun movie to watch, Wolf of Wall Street. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio is just phenomenal in that. I mean, it was good. Like, I love Wolf of Wall Street.
I didn't even know he was in that movie. I was too focused on Margot Robbie.
Oh yeah, Margo. That's interesting too.
Oh, Lori B comes up with Trading Places.
That was a great one. Why didn't we think of Trading Places? Yeah, that is a classic.
That is
with
a
Eddie,
great.
Who was
Eddie,
it?
Eddie
Murphy and
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee
Curtis,
and then the Dan Aykroyd.
Yep, yep. Martin, and I would
that's
have
a great
to say,
one too.
I wouldn't call it strictly financial, but like one of my favorite movies of all time, and this is really going to date me, The Sting.
Yeah, you're dated. I don't even know that movie at all.
You got to be kidding me. Aaron?
He goes off the board. Joel goes off the board. If Joel's drafting and Joel's off the board.
Come
overthought
on.
It.
Help me
Nobody's
out.
Nobody's heard of this one.
Help me out. Help me out. Help me out, chat. Come on, Easy Mike. Come on, where you guys are.
Your dad is in trouble on this one. You went completely off the board. You took like the seventh round pick in the first round.
It's one of the greatest movies of all time.
You took a seventh rounder in the first round.
Uh-oh. Dennis, people in the chat were happy we hadn't talked about sports. Now you're talking about the draft. Joel, what do you think about? Now they're talking about
the draft.
Now they're talking about J.J. McCarthy going top five overall.
Top five?
They're talking about him going
number one. Why would you not take him number one?
Caleb Williams is locked in at number one, but they're talking about taking JJ at number two now.
I don't want to give my thoughts on the draft yet.
Okay.
Robert Redford, if you haven't watched The Sting, you gotta watch it. Robert Redford and Paul
Newman. Robert
Redford's
in this. That's good. Robert Redford is an awesome actor.
Okay. All right.
They got your back now.
The chat's backing you up. Let's bring it
Paul
back.
Paul Newman was in it. Okay. I'm going to watch it. I love Paul Newman. Paul Newman, Color of Money. That's the movie right there. We'll go on a complete tangent. Paul Newman, Color of Money. You like playing pool? That's the best, one of the best movies, too. Tom Cruise,
Redfield,
Paul
Max
Newman.
Got it. The Sting involves horse racing, Dennis.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, The Sting involves horse racing.
You said Wall Street. You took it to horse racing.
You said Joel's finance. Thing. You said finance.
Horse racing is not finance. It's gambling.
There's money
Joel.
Changing hands to Joel's. I
hope Raz isn't listening to the
finance horse racing.
No. All right, okay. Let's bring it back to the markets. We did have Walgreens report earnings this morning. Let me get those numbers for you. Walgreens Boots Alliance. Reported.
It was good numbers, but the hammer in anyway.
Yeah, EPS came in at.
They hate the stock.
EPS came in at 120, beat the 82-cent estimate. Sales came in at $37 billion, beat the $35.86 billion. So the sales beat by like more than $1 billion.
They killed it.
It seems like it's enough to bump the stock up, but you're trading down more than 3.3% this morning. Except the stock closed up 2.5% yesterday, so you're kind of unchanged from yesterday's open. But again, getting hit this morning on what seems like a good report.
Yeah, and And again, the algos get burned on this because they should have realized they can't just look at numbers. You got to look at who's reporting the numbers. So it's beat, beat, but it's Walgreens. Don't pay up 50 or 80 cents for Walgreens. Walgreens, most hated stock ever. You know, eventually you think maybe you're going to bounce here. It's got the 4.92% dividend. But I just keep looking at Walgreens and I think Rite Aid. And I can't stop it. That's why I'm not investing in it. I can't stop thinking about Walgreens. When I go into a Walgreens, it feels like Rite Aid. And we know what happened to Rite Aid. Didn't they go bankrupt twice, Rite Aid? Brought it back and then bankrupt
again. Well, yeah, Walgreens was going to buy it.
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about Rite Aid. I look at Walgreens and I just see Rite Aid. And that's why, no thank you. I don't care what the valuation is. I'm out.
Okay, let's just take a look. This might be an all-time low in this one, is it? Well, not an all-time low. If you're looking for the lows back then. Yeah, 1970. Boom, 1969. That was
the last
year.
Time it was at this price.
Yeah, from the Mets to the Jets to the man on the moon. That was November of last year. You hit 1968, 1975. The dip, that little spike down, I don't think it got quite there. 2020 is a pre-market low. There could be some institutional bids there, so keep an eye on that. Just a real quick tangent. I just wanted to talk about this Merck real quick from yesterday because I almost ended up walking on my hands down the Lodge Freeway to the office.
Close.
That is, I couldn't
believe. It almost opened at 133.
That opened at 132.87.
You got really close to getting burned.
And then it took everybody in at 133, and then they flushed them down the toilet. So
what an up, though. It's right back up there again.
I know.
Kramer,
it was.
Kramer pumped last night. He got the CEO on there, and he says, this stock's going higher. And then it popped another buck there, the Kramer pump holding it up here. I mean, the stock's been in the gutter for a while. It hasn't really, like, not in the gutter, but it hasn't participated like some of these other healthcare stocks, obviously because of not in the obesity trade. But Merck is still a fabulous company at a reasonable valuation. You buy good companies at a reasonable valuation. You buy Merck 132. Are you going to make money 10 years from now? I think so. I don't own it, but I think so.
Yeah, I was reading more about the deal yesterday. And one of Merck's biggest drivers right now, some cancer therapy it has, is like scheduled to, they're going to lose the patent on it or whatever in 2028. So they were saying basically that this deal is going to try to help make up for some of that revenue it's losing down the road. So something to consider there as well. Let's bring it back to, you were talking about banks earlier, Dennis. Bank of America got a downgrade this morning.
Yeah.
Let me go ahead and get the details on that. You were buying Canadian banks, Dennis. What do you think?
You know why? The reason I'm focused on the Canadian banks here now is because the Canadian banks, again, it's the mortgages. The mortgages have, the Canadian ones are starting to come where it's like they're coming due, 5 years max what they give out. So we're 2 years into this. So people are coming due all the time. You're talking to people, my mortgage is coming up. Oh, my mortgage is coming up for renewal. Well, all these people, and I've been with Bank of Nova Scotia for a long time. I've got a second property where I'm carrying a mortgage on, and it's at 1.62%. I've been talking about this, just 1.64, I think. 1.64%. It's coming due in December. So what I've been doing is I don't want to pay. So I don't want to pay 6-7% here, and I'm lucky enough that I can pay the majority of it off. So I've just been putting in GICs, which is Guaranteed Investment Certificate, at the same bank, getting 5.7. So I'm literally arbitraging the bank for 4 points. So, when it comes December, I'm just going to take that GIC. I've already talked to my banker and pay off, the majority of that mortgage so I don't have to pay. But, when rates were 1.64, I didn't need the mortgage then anyways. But the banker's there saying, you can't make 1.64% on your money. He's like, why would you want to pay cash for this? It's 1.64 the rates. I'm like, you make a good point. So I did the mortgage on the thing. And now when the rates are going to go back up, I'm like, okay, well, now I'll flip out. But, most of the people aren't going to have that luxury to turn around. So they're going to be paying 5-7%. So the banks eventually be making more money now that the rates are coming. So I kind of like the Canadian banks for that reason. U.S. banks in a completely different situation.
Sure, they are. Yep.
Because there are 30-year mortgages out there, so the people aren't coming due anytime soon. Maybe the odd one, but not like in Canada. So I kind of like the Canadian banks.
Dennis, when you walk up to that bank where you have that situation, and let's say it's like noon on a Tuesday, and you're walking up, all of a sudden, do they put a sign closed for lunch? And they like, they don't even want, they don't want you coming in the bank.
They don't
here.
Want my business.
Well, Joel, I got a story yesterday or 2 days ago on Tuesday. I had to go to the Bank of America here in downtown Detroit.
Gorgeous building, the Guardian building. One of the most gorgeous buildings in all of the world.
Well, hold on. First of all, it was my first time in the building ever. Second of all, the reason I had to go to the bank was I had to get a cashier's check to pay for like, you know, the security deposit and first month's rent of my new apartment, which seemed so antiquated to me. I'm like, why can't I just type in my debit card number, right? It's the same amount of money. You're pulling it straight from my bank account. Anyway, I had to go get a cashier's check. Walk into the Guardian building. It's dark in there, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of spooky. Like, it's an old building, like you said, it's beautiful, but it was completely dark, and I was like, this is weird. Power was out in the whole building, and the bank was closed. And then I go back to the apartment, and I think they thought I was like, you know, didn't have enough money for the apartment. So they're like, what do you mean you don't have your check yet? And then so I had to go back again yesterday. The lights were on so I could see the architecture and the, you know, paintings gorgeous. In there and stuff. So it was a very nice building, the Bank of America. And the guy was like, did you try to come in here yesterday? I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I recognized you. And so, yeah, that was my like the one time a year I actually had to walk into a bank. Power's out. I mean, just my luck. Let's see. I mean,
the bank's having some money trouble. They can't turn on.
I don't know what to say about this Bank of America.
Yeah, I know. It's a bad tangent.
Yeah, bad tangent.
They've run a long ways. You know what? Lower rates are great for banks. So if the rates are going lower, it's going to be good for the banks all around. So the U.S. banks, Canadian banks, you know, whatever banks, rates going down are good for banks because, you know, obviously the lending long and borrowing short. So, you know, that's, you know, that it's good for banks.
You should buy J.P. Morgan, Dennis.
Yeah, you're funny, Joel. At $30. Could have been my long-term portfolio at $199. It could be retired right now. But Joel said, now you're going to get $28. And I don't. I never forgave you for that. Never forgave
you. I wasn't around for this. I never heard that story.
Like 10 years ago at the beginning of the show. And we're like, I'm like, I love this JP Morgan. It's a great company. I really love Jamie Dimon, obviously. You know, we know JP Morgan. I was like, I've wanted this in the portfolio for a long time. It was at $30. I'm like, I'm going to buy some of this for my long-term portfolio at $30. Joel's like, this level, Joel, or Dennis, is $28. It's coming there. You're going to get it at $28. So I lowered my bid to $28. I never got executed. And the rest is history. The stock's $199. So I tried to save $2 trying to get my entry point in my long-term position, and I missed out. Oh, Joel, you're a fault, Joel.
You can cancel that order, Dennis.
GTC, I had it out.
Actually,
there,
the low of the move was 28.
I was hoping for a flash crash or something. So
it was 28.53 was the low of the move.
28.53.
If you have an order that's good till canceled, will it really sit in your brain, your brokerage?
Six months, I think, usually. Usually 6 months. It depends on your broker, but I think they're usually 6 months.
Because good till canceled, that should mean good till canceled, whether that be 10
forever
years
and ever and ever. GTC.
You get filled, you know, in 200 years and your, you know, goes into your
descendants and you have to go and pay the bill. You had a whole bunch of orders out here. Got caught, you're done.
Let's talk spinoffs.
Yeah, GE and Triple M here. Joel, you might have to give me the details on this. I didn't review this one before the show.
So General Electric is spinning off this weekend. So I believe it's, you have to own it tonight. I believe it's Monday. Correct me if I'm wrong here, chat. But they are spinning off GE Vernova, their global leader, coming right from the website, a global leader driving electrification and decarbonization business there. So GE is spinning that off. That, I believe, you have to own it at the close tonight to get, I think it starts trading on Monday. Again, you know, if I'm wrong here, chat, let me know. You can just see the run-up in GE. It's been running into this spinoff. We know we like to trade events. So being long into this event has paid the bills here too. Been going straight up. You wonder if it doesn't, after its spinoff, doesn't, you know, lighten up. And again, you know, it's spinning off. So there'll be some adjustments and stuff. But they spun off GE Healthcare a while ago. That was the old one. But this is GE Vernova. I don't got it. Is it ticker symbol GEV, I think? Is it GEV, chat? Yeah, GEV. Oh, okay. It's going to start trading April the 2nd. So if we're looking at our calendar here, bringing it up, that would make it. Yeah. Am I correct? That's Monday, April 2nd. My calendar's not opening. Monday's April 2nd.
We'll never know the true value of GE.
No, Monday's April 1st. It says it's going to start trading April 2nd, so maybe I'm wrong on the date here.
Man, all the spinoffs and the reverse split. This is one of the only Now, you know, there are a few, but your reverse split companies that survived and prospered. So this is kind of now I don't even know what to say about this stock. Did the reverse split? Did you have those other stocks? So once the top component in the S&P 500 a long, long time ago on the road to recovery. That was a long, I think. That was a long time ago. So, okay, 850.
So, yeah, so GEV, April the 2nd, I'm correcting myself. So I believe you'll have to own it on Monday then, because if it's going to start trading on the 2nd. 3M also spinning something off.
Yep. 3M. So you got this one? It will trade on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker SOLV on April 1st. So maybe
I reversed them. You reversed. So it's 3M that you got to own tonight, and it's GE you got to own on the Monday. So, yeah. So you're getting two spinoffs from two major corporations.
Yeah, so this is like a medical device play. Again, that 3M is spinning off. It's going to start trading on April 1st. I don't really know too much about this Solventum company. The name comes from, they're saying, solving and momentum mushed together is Solventum. But again,
okay, sounds good.
But yeah, sounds good to me. Medical sounds device right. company. If you're bullish that space, I mean, this could be a play for you. But again, yeah. I don't know too much about this company that 3M is spinning off, so I don't want to, you know, talk about it. But you know, I mean, 3M. We did talk about the stock recently. Still dealing with some of those, you know, overhead legal issues. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the stock has just been such a dog the past 5 years, really.
It's the earplugs. I mean, we don't know. They still haven't figured out the liability there. Yep. Some people said if they had to pay everything that they're going to pay, the company's bankrupt. I mean, this is what is holding it back. So until we get further clarity, which has been the cloud over the stock for years, to your point, Aaron, for years.
You 2017, know, the stock topped out. I mean, we were making, yeah. You know, highs, those, you know, from 2017 all the way until, you know, the COVID crash. And 3M has never... I mean, there's like a dividend on there, and I always look at it, and I'm like, oh, you know, 3% dividend, that sounds nice. And then I look at the chart, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't look nice. So,
it's hard to go and invest when you don't have the dollar figure on this, and we don't know what the long-term dollar figure still is on this. I don't know if they're ever going to know, but the PE on it is 10. The dividend is 5.79%. If they didn't have the earplug issue, this is a screaming buy. If they didn't have the earplug issue, but we don't know. Like, they're gonna have billions and billions of dollars they're gonna have to pay out. Well, that's got to come from somewhere. So insurance ain't gonna cover it all. So I mean, that's why the stock is depressed. It's the same reason, you know, the Taiwan semiconductor. We have the, you know, the wild card. We don't know if China's gonna invade. So in here, we don't know if the earplug lawsuits are gonna bankrupt the company. So that's the wild card here. But if you think, you know, it's gonna get by this okay, the valuation on 3M's been attractive for a very long time.
You know what else other stock has been sorry, Joel, you want to come in and give some levels real quick?
For the triple M, that's just kind of in the mid, down 20. I'll pass on this one. It had to gap up and it held, so it's retracing. Don't have any good levels for you in triple M.
You know what other stock has been an absolute dog, which I actually used to like this stock, and then I learned quickly I was wrong on it and got out. Is SMG, Scott's Miracle-Gro.
Oh, there's Dennis, you still in that one?
No, I've been out of SMG for a while, but this has been the dog of all dogs. It was the pot play for a long time, like yeah. back, and I think it actually is perking up here because they still got it as the pot play. You know, even though their Scott's Miracle-Gro goes on everything, but it does go on pot plants too, so they've got her as the pot play. I mean, it's perked up here in the last, you know, couple of weeks, because these pot stocks have just been exploding. I mean, you see the move in CGC over the course of the last 2 weeks, $3 to $9. Canadian ones especially. We had Tim Seymour on yesterday talking about this. Tilray, ACB. I mean, these stocks, you know, are really starting to kickstart it. Some of the U.S. ones starting to go GRWG 2 to 3. So I think SMG is getting a little bit of love from that. It does look like it wants to continue to go higher here,
oh,
too.
Oh, look at it,
Valuation has always been attractive in this stock. Like, if we just go to a trusty Benzinga Pro and bring up the details, you know, you're talking about 3.59% dividend, which isn't nothing. PE is 24, so it's not super cheap. I thought it was cheaper than that. Maybe the earnings came down a bit.
There's a reason I brought up Scott's Miracle-Gro today. I don't know if you guys can think of it. I'll leave that in the chat for a second to see if they can figure it out either. It is 9:01, though, so I won't wait too long.
Okay, I just want to – I got a multiple star level here for you guys. Look at this. Look at all those stars there. if you're looking to play this SMG, I never would have looked at this chart. I'm not going to worry about the 73.99 seller because someone came off the point and they've been selling it 73.50. But somehow, some way, if this can get above 73.50, looks pretty wide open on the monthlies. Maybe your next target would be 78.25. Okay. What's your secret? What's
the
your
reason
secret?
I brought up Scott's Miracle-Gro today? It's one of my favorite days of the year. MLB opening day. Scott's Miracle-Gro, the official grass provider of Major League Baseball.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know if we're going to get an MLB opening day trade on SMG today, but again, I mean, you know, if you guys have a baseball team out there you're a fan of, I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan. Good luck to your teams today.
How do the Tigers look?
Decent.
They're going to be better. It's been like, I'm the bandwagon Tiger fan here. So I'm like, when they're just, you know, losing 100 games, I'm not even looking at any of it, but are they going to be better? Are we going to be good? We get 500.
They got a couple. 500.
Oh, they got a chance. No, they got a chance.
Young guys, Riley Green, Parker Meadows was a rookie who played really well in spring training. I believe the Tigers play the White Sox today. So yeah, I mean, it'll be
Spencer Torkelson at first base. They got some young guys in the outfield. They picked up some free agents. Very strong young pitching staff that's supposed to lead them. But I'll tell you, man, and I think I mentioned this on the show, and it's one of my most embarrassing sports moments of my entire life.
Oh, God,
I was flying back from Florida a couple months ago. And this guy sitting next to me, he didn't have any Tiger gear on. And I'm like looking at him. I'm like, I know this guy. I know this guy. I'm looking at the side. The people came on. It took selfies with him. And he's not looking at anything sports. And I'm like, I asked Lisa. Lisa's like, I don't know. Right next to me, right in the seat next to me. And the whole way home, I'm thinking, like, who was that guy? Who was that guy? And then it hit me. It was the manager of the Tigers, AJ Hinch.
Oh, really?
He's probably so glad I didn't recognize him because I would have talked his ear off. But I sat next to I would have got the inside scoop, but we're not. All right.
It'd be cool if it was Sparky. Remember back in the day, Sparky Anderson.
George Sparky Anderson.
Oil Sparky. You couldn't beat Sparky.
The 1984 Tigers, that was my senior year of college. Okay. And I did not go to class until like any of like, you know, during the playoffs in the World Series. And I had all these things due. And I went to one of my teachers and I said, you know what? The Tigers have been in the World Series.
I can't do any of my homework. Yeah. The Tigers are in the World Series.
Honesty is the best policy.
And the teacher gave me an extension on it.
Like this may never come back around here again, and it never has. So you got to enjoy. 1984 was a great year. Tigers won the World Series, and the Oilers won the Stanley Cup. Both my teams won. The problem was I was only 8 years old at the time, so I really didn't appreciate it.
Well, we'll be back there soon, hopefully. All right, guys, 9:04 a.m. again. There will be no show tomorrow as the market is closed for Good Friday. If you celebrate the holiday, have a great holiday weekend. We will be back on Monday. Joel, who do we got coming on?
We're going to talk. We're going to have a fundamental show. We're going to talk with Tracy Reiniak from Zacks. Nice. She's just, you know, enough of our stupid sports stories and movie talk. We're going to get down to fundamentals with Tracy Reiniak. Looking forward to it.
Beautiful, sounds guys. Good. Well, Dennis, any final thoughts?
I think you're going to see more chop here. I mean, we're just in rotation. Remember the title of the show, Rotation Station? That is going to continue. NVIDIA's strength is Apple's weakness. I mean, I'm still trading that. That was working like a charm yesterday here. I mean, NVIDIA was going straight down, and then Apple just started going straight up. I mean, it's again, you know, similar story here this morning in the pre-market. They've identified NVIDIA's down $4. Oh, no, Apple's, you know, well, actually, Apple is trading down. So, sorry, I was wrong on that. Apple's down. So, there's an arbitrage. So, I'd be buying the dip on Apple. If NVIDIA's going to stay down, I'm buying the dip on Apple right now, not long-term, just short-term trading talking here.
All right, guys. Well, have a great day. Stay in the green. We'll see you guys on Monday.